this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show.
Today we're going to talk about the number one high income skill that you're going to be able to get thanks to our expert, Bryce Henson. And even if you're not natural born at this, and even if you're not a high energy person, you're an introvert like me, Bryce is going to show you the path to success. Bryce, you ready to rock?
Let's go, Craig.
Awesome. Let's do this. Bryce Henson, my man, welcome to the show.
Craig, thanks for having me, my friend.
This is going to be a lot of fun. So listen, you've walked a long and tough road to become the CEO of Fit Body Bootcamp. And we're going to get there in about all the great leadership and the tips and secrets you have about inspiring your team and inspiring a community to get through some tough times. But take me back to Bryce's tougher days and younger days. What got you here, my man?
Yeah, great question. Well, I always say originally I'm from the Midwest, but originally my first 10 years were spent in Atlanta, Georgia, in the deep South. I used to talk wow. like this when I was a little guy. I was blessed with adversity and challenge at a young age. And what I mean by that is my father was an alcoholic. He was a gambler. He had addictive personality to gambling, and he was a drug addict. The trifecta, not necessarily conducive for a good family upbringing. And, you know, when I was young, as I continue to get older, the verbal fights and, you know, between my parents and my father became progressively worse. And it got to a point one time where the abuse not only became verbal, but crossed into physical. And there my mom was with the three kids. After an argument broke out, my dad came home in a drunken rage, lost thousands of dollars on a betting habit or addiction that he had. And, you know, things got physical, and my mom found herself on a bed with his two hands over her and screaming for her life. Knees hit the floor, ran out of the room. By the grace of God, escaped that situation. And the next thing you know, myself, my siblings were on a plane to Michigan the very next day with a completely different life. And I think that really traumatic event then led to 10 years of watching my mom struggle and make ends meet, and bless her heart, she worked so hard to put food on the table for us kids. And through that experience, I just learned the value of work ethic and, you know, self-sufficiency. But the biggest lesson I learned, Craig, at that time frame was the fact, the cold, hard truth of this. And the fact is that no one is coming to save you. It's up to you to take ownership, to take the pen and really make something for yourself. And while that was a traumatic kind of upbringing, if you will, to many extents, it was a blessing in disguise and really paved the way for, you know, future success.
What's the difference between people that believe somebody is coming to save them and people that understand that no one is coming to save them? What's the difference in their outcome in life?
Oh, I mean, it's completely different. One's the passive approach. You're waiting. And the other aspect is the proactive approach. And we know this in business. We know this in leadership. We know this in life. The people that take a proactive approach, not a reactive, are the ones who are successful, make an impact, are financially successful, and really, you know, help those around them.
So when you're in high school and, you know, even in your early college time, like what got you through those years? Like what was the motivation? What were you thinking during those times when it was a struggle for your mom to support everybody?
I think a lot of confusion, right? And probably much of your audience can relate. It's some sort, you know, some period of time, a traumatic event happened or a huge challenge. And for me, there was confusion, there was misunderstanding, and just a lot of emotions. And if I'm being really honest with you, I channeled a lot of frustration, which I harbored as anger. And thankfully, I redirected that at a very positive outcome. I always just wanted to be better, a better version of myself. But, you know, taking a step back, I could have easily went the other way and, you know, channeled it towards the darkness, gotten, you know, involved with it, you know, trouble and gangs and all that. Thankfully, I didn't. But I think I took that frustration, harbored it towards anger, and really channeled it to good.
Yeah. And then so you went on and started a Fit Body Bootcamp. Gosh, how many years ago now?
First location opened in fall of 2012. So 10 years.
Yeah. Wow. And then, so what were some of your early leadership lessons and beliefs? Like, what did you think a leader was and how did you lead the company?
Well, great question. I think, I initially thought a leader had to do everything because I gained, and still this to this day, if I'm being very honest with you, but I gained a lot of value through production. So if I produce, if I add value to my team, my circle of influence, my following, that creates value for me. And that's still the case. However, from a leadership perspective, one of the biggest beliefs that was just not accurate is I have to do everything. And at the end of the day, you can only do so much. And the value of leadership is actually velocity. It's getting people pointed at a common purpose or a mission and using that velocity to accomplish things, not necessarily just your personal labor. So that was a huge learning lesson that I learned probably the first 2 years of business, almost burnt out. I mean, I have a strong work ethic, but there was many days where I'm like, what the heck did I get myself into? But thankfully overcame that, realized the power of delegation, of communication, of teamwork, and was able to lead my team to multiple locations.
Yeah. So what is it that you would say evolved in your leadership over that time? Like, how would you describe your leadership? I know you don't really work in the Fit Body Bootcamp location these days, but you know, when you were exiting that into the new role, what was your leadership like then? And what is it like now?
Oh, the smokes. Well, it was not strong, not always good intention, but you know, take a step back. Leadership, from my perspective, Craig, is just a skill. Now, it's a learnable skill, just like marketing or sales or driving a car or you know tying your shoes. It's just a learnable skill. Now, there's something to be said. I believe that the best leaders out there have eventually developed an identity around it. But ultimately it's just a learnable skill that needs more focus and attention. And for me, you know, learning by, you know, miscommunicating and not looping my team in or not handling situations correctly, were just big learning opportunities that eventually made my leadership better. And to your point, I'm a student of leadership. It's been told to me, it's one of my strengths, my zone of geniuses. And I've come a long way, but I certainly have a long way to go.
What would you, you know, if you go back to like a, or not go back to, but, you know, speak to a group of, you know, new business owners or even new leaders in the community, what are some of the first things that you're going to tell them that are the fundamentals in Bryce's world for good leadership?
Yeah, so I want to define it, and I buy into John Maxwell's definition of leadership, meaning influence. It's really the ability to influence a person, organization, a team. So with that mindset, really that's the foundation of leadership. For me, I have four kind of pillars that I really view leadership as. The first is courage. You have to have courage because really, you know, the definition of leadership is standing out, being vulnerable, many times going against the grain. And if you don't have courage, and courage, again, it's a muscle that you continue to flex and develop. But if you don't have courage, you're not going to be an effective, strong leader. The second is connection.
So hold on. Let's actually unpack that.
Sure.
What do you mean by courage? And what's an example of courage in leadership that you've either seen at a really high level, like maybe we've seen it on TV recently, or even just in a very tactical, practical, clear, articulated example of leadership, even in the Fit Body Bootcamp community where we've seen courage?
I'll give you a very vulnerable story of mine. And it was probably one of the biggest turning points in my leadership. And this was in 2016 timeframe. And as it turns out, I had to terminate my sister, who I love, who I care. She was a facility leader. And as it turns out, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I know you know this, but for your audience. And my sister, you know, has the same kind of genetic issue as I do. So there was a lot of things in the back end that just, you know, balls got dropped and, you know, just a very challenging situation outside of the scope of her, not her ability, but look at his disease. In any case, long story short, I eventually had to make a decision that broke my heart, but ultimately developed me into a stronger leader, knowing that I need to put the mission of the company, the mission of my team, the mission of my following over the man, even though in this case, the man was my sister who I love and adored. So was I scared shitless? Absolutely. Was I terrified? Did I have second doubts before I made that decision? Yes. But ultimately it was the right decision, not only for my team, for my clients, my following, but also for her too, because it really changed the course of her trajectory in a very positive way.
Got it. So let's go and talk about your alcoholism, because, you know, very much like me, you know, but we both grew up with alcoholic fathers and yet we both became binge drinkers. So walk us through your evolution into becoming a binge drinker after, like, you knew what you were doing was probably not a great idea. And then when you got out of it and what committing to zero alcohol has done for you.
Yeah. Holy smokes. So it's interesting, Craig. I know I kind of started with the story because you asked about, like, you know, the trials, the adversity that I particularly went through, that you've been through, and, you know, many of your audience can relate to. And, you know, thankfully by my mother's, you know, I guess, proactive approach, we escaped my father's situation when I was about 10. So certainly I was 10. I had many experiences, many memories of the situation. However, in my later, you know, developing years, my father was out to my life. In fact, I haven't seen him, in over 25 years. So I share this with you just, you know, to provide the context that after 10 years old, while I have memories of traumatic experiences with the gambling, with the fights, with the alcohol, I didn't have any really recent experiences as I was kind of becoming of age, if you will. So it wasn't front and center to me. And it was a bit of an oversight on my part. I thought to myself, I knew growing up that my dad was an alcoholic, but I thought to myself that that's just, you know, him, you know, et cetera. I can drink responsibly. So, you know, I started that in, you know, 16, 17 years old, like many, you know, young kids do. And then in my 20s and onward, it just developed into like this binge drinking, you know, situation. It wasn't the frequency that I drank, because I never was a daily drinker. When I thought of an alcoholic, I think of someone who, you know, is without a job, homeless, drinking a brown bag. That was never me. I was always very highly ambitious. But what happened, Craig, was that when I would drink, it would be very aggressively, and I just had no governor, had no off switch. So it finally came to a point after some miscommitments, you know, some shame, some, you know, regret of doing things that I shouldn't have done and whatnot over a period of a handful of years. But as I alluded to with, you know, when I had to step up from a leadership perspective and make the right decision, even though it was the most challenging decision, to part ways with my sister from a working relationship, how that all came to be is after, you know, many last chances and final warnings, she ended up or ended up having a conversation with her after, you know, a binge drinking situation that she had. And Craig, I sat down with her and I had probably about three or four conversations previously, very similar to this. And I said, Emma, I love you. You are literally such an important person to me. But what I've realized is that, you know, if you can, we continue in this manner and you continue to drink alcohol, it's not going to end well. And in fact, it's irresponsible for our team, our family, our clients, et cetera. And, so we came out with an agreement that, you know, she wasn't going to drink for X amount of time. And Craig, when I came back, you know, from that conversation and I went home and I slept on it. And the next day I woke up and I had a deep, deep look in the mirror. And I thought to myself, you know, while I didn't have the outwardly repercussions because of alcohol, at the end of the day, it's affected my life. And now it's affecting my family again for the second time. And, it, you know, some of the stuff that happened to her could easily happen to me. So while our society, and rightfully so, I believe, will forgive criminals, not hypocrites, I realized to myself that I do not want to be a hypocrite. And that was really the day that I decided I can't have alcohol in my life, even if it's just, you know, infrequent, but a binge drinking perspective. And that literally has changed the trajectory for the last going on 6 years.
That's powerful, my man. Really, really appreciate it. And, you know, so now, you know, if we go into where we are today, you are the CEO of Fit Body Bootcamp. You mentored under our friend Bedros Cooley, and he passed the reins to you last year. It was pretty awesome. And I get your weekly email because I'm a franchisee of Fit Body Bootcamp. And I was reading your message today that you sent out, and you said that you have your best team ever right now. So let's unpack that. How much of a team success depends on leadership, and how does good leadership contribute to the recruiting and hiring of a team?
Yeah, I mean, for me, leadership is everything. I think a famous adage that I completely buy into is everything rises and falls on leadership. So, and it's not just the top end leader. And I feel blessed. Like I said, I have a long way to go, but I've definitely acquired many leadership skills throughout the years. A lot of by trial and error, but leadership is at every single branch of the chain, both up and down. So really the secret sauce and why our team is so stacked, it's the strongest team that we've ever, been. One, from a leadership perspective, we recruit, we hire, and we develop leaders. And Jocko Willink talks about this in his book, Extreme Ownership, having you need to basically release situational authority to the man who has the most situational authority in your team to have him or her make that call. And what I'm trying to say here is you need to, in order to really create an incredible organization, you can't just have a leader at the top saying, hey, this is what we need to do. You have to breed a culture of leadership. And I think for the first time that I've been on the team in the last 10 years, the franchise, I can look at you and say every single one of our HQ team members, they're dialed in. They are bought into the mission, the vision, and the values. They execute at a high level, and they are leaders to their core.
So what does it mean to hire for leaders? What do you look for there?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think one, you got to look for someone who is an ambitious, go-getter, right? Typically, again, as our conversation earlier, leaders are proactive. They are not reactive. Someone who's curious, who's hungry, who's willing to learn, who can take feedback. Being a leader, and I feel like one of my biggest roles here within the company is I'm the CEO, but I sometimes say I'm the CFO, the chief feedback officer, because as a leader, you need to be able to give and receive feedback. And you need to look for people on your team that are open to feedback, that take feedback, and that can act on feedback. So there's just a few of probably many qualities that we look for in developing young leaders on our team.
So if someone's watching this and thinking, well, when I think of leadership, I think of somebody who is very extroverted, very charismatic. What's the truth about that when it comes to leadership? And how does one who doesn't have those characteristics, how can they be a good leader?
Well, I think there is something to be said for someone who has, charisma and energy, kind of like a guy like Tony Robbins is an example. Because really, if we break down, what leadership is again and reverse engineer it, it's influence. And when you're able to transfer energy, what you're really doing is being able to transfer emotion. You're going to have a really big advantage on inspiring people to get behind your vision and lead them well. So I do think there's a lot to be said about, charisma, energy, and focus, because you're going to naturally be able to communicate and then, draw a following to you. But it's not the end all be all. And going back to my four pillars of leadership, one was courage, which we talked about. So, for someone maybe who's timid or shy, you can still be courageous. Okay. So that's that. Connection is the second C, because in leadership is influence. So at the foundational level, leadership is about building relationships, building connection with people. And if you can create connection, even if you might be shy or introverted, there's a lot of, people in that category who can still build strong relationships. So that's the second aspect of the leadership that this person would need to, skill they need to acquire. The third is communication. At the end of the day, you have to be a strong communicator. And maybe that's written, maybe that's orally, maybe that's on, video or in front of a stage. But in order to get a group of people behind a vision, behind a purpose, charging towards the same direction, you need to be able to clearly articulate your mission, your vision, and your values. So communication is paramount. And the last is consistency. People will be attracted to a steady leader, to someone who's cool, calm, and collected. So again, to answer your question, while having energy and charisma will definitely help that effort. If you're a listener here and you're shy, you're introverted, you don't necessarily have that skill sets. As long as you possess courage, if you can connect with people, build relationships, if you can communicate and articulate your vision and you can be consistent, I think those are really four foundational qualities and characteristics.
What are some of the biggest mistakes that a leader can make that destroy all that credibility in their leadership?
Ego. Ego is completely detrimental. And if you look at, and we've all felt this, and, you know, humbly myself, I still even feel this, like the natural urge at some time when I have a subordinate or, you know, someone that's reporting to me says like, no, I don't think we should do this. We should do it this way. It's the immediate, it's like, well, oh, wait. You know, who's in charge here? But yeah, that's ego. That's ego flaring up. And at the end of the day, you're not going to build connection. You're not going to build relationships if you have a high ego. So that's the biggest caution and the biggest adversary of good leadership.
So where do the leaders, in terms of the community, you know, things, or sorry, the communication you mentioned is so important, and it's difficult for people to, it's not difficult, but it's very important for people to have. Where do they fail in communication? Like, what are they supposed to communicate to their team in order to be a great leader?
I think you have to have some systems and processes in your business. And we adopted a system called EOS, which, you know, has different checkpoints in terms of, you know, meetings and communication and follow-up communication and debriefs and whatnot. So I think that really, you know, it helps to have a system of communication. But a lot of the breaks in teamwork just come to like poor communication or lack their communication, or people make assumptions. Oh, I think you're on the same page. And on the flip side, the strongest leaders, the strongest organizations not only communicate, but they over-communicate, because at the end of the day, you need every single person on your team like crystal clear of the mission and the objective. Like, think about it. I just talked about Jocko Willink. You know, you have a military group of people who are fighting in Afghanistan or whatever the case may be. In order to effectively achieve the mission, every single person on that team has to have complete clarity what their mission is, complete clarity in the details, because when war breaks out and confusion happens, if everyone's not on the exact same page, like that's when chaos and disaster strikes. And thankfully, you know, I'm not in the business, the battlefield of, you know, Afghanistan or et cetera, but those same principles very much apply in your organization. So there's an opportunity to communicate and over-communicate. When you do, your people on the same page, the opposite is also true.
That's awesome. So speaking of same page, you have a quarterly state of the franchise address going out. What is that? Why do you do that? Who do you do that for? And how can other leaders incorporate that?
Yeah. So going back to the EOS system that I just referred to, which is, stands for the Entrepreneur Operating System. It was developed by Gina Wickman. You know, Craig, I know we've chatted about it, you know, offline many times. Incredibly strong tool on reorganizing or organizing and reorganizing and really setting a system to operate your business. And one of the key components is every quarter you craft a quarterly state of the business. And we're in the franchising space. So typically most companies who are not franchising focused, they just have direct to consumer or B2B. It's pretty straightforward. You gather your team every 90 days and you give them a recap of like, hey, what did this last quarter look like from a financial perspective, from a marketing perspective, from an operations perspective, along all your different department lines, which then you can, you know, gain traction and have your other leadership team present on their particular roles of accountability. But from our case, we've taken that to another level, and we've been doing QSBs or quarterly state of the businesses for, you know, over the last year now. But now we're updating that to our franchisee facing, because it just makes sense. If we're leading our organization, not only do our internal team here at HQ need to know exactly the vision, but also our franchisees need to know that as well. So I'm super excited to get on the horn next week and of our first quarterly state of the business franchisee facing to provide a lot more clarity and better communication to our brand.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. And I was just reading some quotes from Sun Tzu in The Art of War, and he says, treat your people as you would your own beloved sons, and they will follow you into the deepest valley. And I think that when you share and communicate, and when you are open to feedback, and when you give feedback in the right way, you can really move and inspire people to follow you as the leader. So if we stick on the topic of feedback, how does somebody take feedback and how does a leader give feedback? Like, what's the optimal way for a leader to take and to receive and to give feedback?
Yeah, I think that having a system of giving feedback is really important. So that way it's just a condition of doing business. So quarterly check-ins, the EOS system calls them 5x5x5s, which are just quarterly conversations with your team, not far more than, or far more frequent than annual reviews, which is just way too long. You need to be able to create a systematic approach to be able to provide feedback to your team. Additionally, I'll kind of get to the other part of the question in a second. I think you also need to do, and what's really worked well for our organization, is to train your team and set the expectation that this is how we do business. Creating a feedback culture is absolutely necessary. And one way we do this is, there's two incredible training videos by a gentleman named Craig Groeschel, who has a leadership podcast. I'm sure, Craig, you're fully aware. And if you're not, if your audience is not, he shot two particular episodes called Giving and Receiving Feedback Part 1 and Part 2. So yeah, every single person that comes through our organization, from our HQ team, and actually now our new coaches onboarding playbook, which we built out for our franchisees. So every time they have a new coach coming through, they watch these two podcasts, they take a quiz, and they basically have a conversation about it. And really, Craig does an incredible job of articulating the value of feedback and the different components of feedback. But really, from the very beginning, everyone in our organization understands the value of feedback, why we give it, the importance of it, and really just conditioning that we have a really strong feedback culture here. So the training, the expectation, and then just the frequency. And the last part of the question is how to deliver it. I mean, there's multiple ways you can do it. I'm a particular fan of the Oreo method. You know, start with some solid feedback that, this person is doing really well. Some suggestions for improvement. Be very specific with examples, because, you know, even if you've done all the work in terms of training and providing that feedback culture and within your organization, people still get, you know, emotionally drawn to it. So you want to be able to provide feedback on the behavior, not necessarily the person. And specificity is everything. And then lastly, finish off with accolades. And that typically has worked really well for us.
Yeah. And that would be like a kind of praise in public and give feedback like that in private.
Yeah. And that's even, you know, from our franchisees, especially, and we teach our clients this, or teach our coaches an example, when they're running training sessions, you praise in public, you praise on the mic, Mrs. Jones, you're crushing it. Mrs. Johnson, oh my goodness, you know, awesome work. But then when you have to give, you know, corrective form, it's like you pull that client to a side, or you kind of get low down on one knee and say, hey, move your butt here, move your hips there. So praise in public and then correct in private. And that basically analogy goes through all of our organization.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So I mean, you just love leadership. And so what's your calling in life? Is it to be the CEO of this Fit Body Bootcamp, or do you have some other grand plans and ambitions?
Well, I'm a student of leadership. I love it. And I think primarily because I love people. I really love that connection piece. I think that's really served me well. And I just love connecting and really accomplishing things. And what I learned at a very young age is, especially when I was a young guy playing sports, I was the smallest guy. I was 5'1" when I was a freshman, sophomore in high school. And all my friends were, you know, close to 6 foot, or, you know, hitting their growth spurts. But there I was, the captain of our soccer team, just leading the troops, because, you know, I just probably an internal wiring, but my love, my dedication, and realizing that when you can get a group of people together and then towards the same mission and vision, you can accomplish way, way more. So I just see intrinsic value from a relationship perspective in leadership. Also, just there's a giant need. And then also from a business perspective, the leverage and velocity in leadership for being a high impact skill that, Craig, you teach about.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a leader, you know, if you're giving and receiving feedback with a lot of people, and you're probably involved with a lot of meetings, and how do you avoid getting spread too thin? You know, like there's dozens and dozens and dozens of team members at FitBody, and then you have the 500 plus franchisees. And then, you know, even in your gyms, you have hundreds of attendees. Like, you know, you can't talk to every single person every single day for 10 to 20 minutes. So how do you avoid getting spread thin, and how do you maximize your leadership output in all your communities?
Yeah. Well, Craig, I've learned this from you over the years, but you have to get good at saying no. And I think there's something to be said when you're young and when you're developing skills and you're entering the workforce, you got to say yes to a lot of things because you don't have a lot of opportunity. You don't have a lot of skill set. But as you get better, as you get more defined, as you, you know, bring on team members and take on more responsibility, you have to actually say yes way more than you say no to be able to guard your time. So Craig, shout out to you because I've learned many things from you and that's definitely one of them.
And so what is the parameters for which you guard your time? Like, how do you know what to say yes to and what to say no to?
Well, specifically when it comes to people, you know, I've read many books and research, and I think, again, quoting Jocko Willink, an effective leader can only really lead up to 6 to 8 people in any, you know, given time. Anything more than that is where the situation breaks down. So really from a structural perspective, you have to make sure that your organizational structure, accountability structure in your team, as a leader, you don't have more than 6 to 8 people reporting to you, because if you do, that's going to be a huge ball drop. So I would start there. And then additionally, it's just thinking enough, I was on a mastermind call teaching with our good friend, both of our good friends, Matt Wilbur. And we went through this exercise on the EOS system called Delegate and Elevate. And really what it is, you know, you write out all the things that you're good at and you love doing, that you're not good at, but you still do. And then from there, once you have a good understanding of like your zones of genius, the whole goal is to try to delegate as much of that stuff off your plate as humanly possible. Bedros, our other mutual friend, calls it the 5% rule. So that way you are just completely focused on your zone of genius, and more specifically, Craig, the things, the levers in your business that are going to move the needle, which in most case for especially visionaries and leaders are leadership and marketing and sales.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some of the day-to-day examples of you leading your team? Like what does it look like for you to be the CEO of Fit Body Bootcamp? Maybe to walk us through a couple days a week, like when do you have meetings and when do you have the one-on-ones? And then do you have any scheduled time for strategy, or are you just all meetings all the time?
So I am very structured, and Craig, this is another thing I've learned from your Perfect White Life formula and workshop, that structure and routine is mission critical. Now, there's something to be said about planning vacation and doing that as priority, which again, I've learned from you a lot as well, because you need that release time, et cetera. But throughout the course of the week and or like days and weeks, I'm just a very structured guy, very routine based. So I'm up at 4. I'm getting my workout in early in the morning. I'm at the HQ by 6 o'clock.
Wow.
One, because from 6 to 8, no one else is in the building. Literally, it's just me here. And that's my 2-hour window and my magic time. Because once 8 o'clock hits, I don't actually schedule any meetings till 10 a.m. at the earliest. So I do, technically speaking, have from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., which is just basically complete work. But those first 2 hours when my team's not here, that's really my magic time. Because then what happens is once people come through, then at 10 o'clock, then that's when the meetings start. And, you know, typically speaking, my every day is not the same, but my Mondays are pretty much the exact same as the following Monday. Same with Tuesday, same with Wednesday. And that just really gets me on a nice routine. So people know when to expect me. And again, from the leadership perspective, one of the fourth component that I live by is that consistency. Everyone loves and is attracted to a consistent and steady leader. So I have to have a very consistent and routine approach in terms of my life, my schedule, my leadership.
And so when it comes to meetings, how do you structure meetings? So first of all, that it doesn't go too long, because, you know, if you have a meeting at 10 that's supposed to go to 11, that goes 11:15, the entire day is thrown off. So how do you make sure that the meetings as a leader, like how do you keep that on track?
Yeah. So again, I know I'm kind of hitting this, you know, really on the head here, but with the EOS system that we have, there's the structure of the meetings are called L10 meetings. They stand for level 10 and they're 90 minute. And these are just the weekly meetings, the consistent meetings that happen every single week with a specific team. I'm not talking about a one-off meeting, like for example, a conversation with you or whomever, Bezos, et cetera. But they're 90 minute meetings. They start and end on time. They're very structured. They follow the exact US L10 flow. And even if all the things are not done at the very end, you have to break, because ultimately you have to be respectful of not only your time, but the rest of your team's time. But it also was a really good challenge and exercise of prioritizing. So at the very beginning, or not the beginning of the meeting, We, about 10 minutes into the meeting, we go through what's called IDS, which stands for Identify, Discuss, and Solve. So any issues that basically need to be identified, discussed, and solved as a team, all of our team, whoever's in that meeting, are empowered to add those to the IDS list before the meeting. So you have a list of, we'll say, anywhere from 10 to 30 things in a list. And if I'm integrating that meeting, meaning if I'm running that meeting, which I run some, but not all, because every meeting has an integrator, it's the integrator's job to basically prioritize what are the biggest things that need to happen and need to be resolved this week, and all the other stuff falls to the wayside. So that way we can basically finish on a timely basis of 90 minutes.
Okay. And so obviously EOS is a huge influence on you. Where's the best place for people to start with them?
There are two books that I would highly recommend. The first one's called What the Heck is EOS? And that's a very bite-sized, dumbed-down book. We actually have, and that sounded that kind of bad to say it's a dumbed-down book, but it's basically taking the concepts, really distilling them in a very basic form. And that's the book that we have all of our teammates across the board read. But there's another book also by Gina Wickman called Traction. And Traction is kind of the higher level. All of our leadership team reads this. Those two books alone, between Traction and then What the Heck is EOS, will give your audience a very, very good foundational start. And then secondarily, to kind of add to that, what we did about 2 years ago is we ended up hiring an EOS implementer. His name's Brian Underhill, an incredible dude. And he actually takes the concepts of EOS. He's a proper integrator, proper coach within the system. And every 3 months, so four times a year, we meet, he actually implements the EOS systems. But that would be kind of a more advanced level.
Got it. And then, you know, so you're getting influenced by that. Who aside from Fitbody Bootcamp are you aiming to influence these days?
Oh man. Well, I think, you know, I'm still young. I still have a lot of juice left in the tank in terms of like what my full potential is. I think, Craig, you know, my calling is really to help people that are hungry to help themselves. And, you know, initially started in the fitness element because fitness absolutely changed my life. I went through an incredible transformation 15 years ago in January of 2007, which rocked my world, gave me the confidence, the energy, environments to enter the fitness space as a professional. And then over the last, you know, handful of years, that passion has actually been more directed to leading people. And it's a byproduct of just what I've had to do. Never in a million years when I first started my first fit body, I thought, okay, I'm an energetic coach. Fitness changed my life. I just need to be the best coach ever. And yes, that's true if you're running fitness sessions. But when I took a step back and I realized the impact that I want to make, you know, communication, marketing, sales, and leadership are just skills I need to acquire. And as I've developed that leadership skill, it's really put me on this leadership path. But I think the commonality of both Mrs. Jones, our you know, fitness clients, our franchisees, and the people that I want to continue to impact, they all really revolve around the same thing. People that are hungry to help themselves, I have a huge passion to serve.
That's amazing, my man. It's amazing. Bryce, is there anything that I forgot to ask you today about leadership or your daily leadership habits or, you know, what we can do as aspiring leaders to get better?
The last point I usually hit on in talks like these is just my commitment. It's more of a mindset perspective and my commitment to studying Stoic philosophy. And I know, you know, being close friends with you, Craig, we've had many conversations about this, but mm-hmm. I think Stoicism is something that innately it came naturally to me. You know, I kind of shared with you my childhood, my story of, you know, the blessing disguised as a tragedy. I remember looking, you know, when I was 10 years old and coming to the realization that if it has to be, it's up to me. And that thought has taken a different, you know, turn throughout the years. And what I look at that now and I kind of draw, you know, a lot of confidence and refuge in Stoic philosophy, taking, you know, what's in your control and what's out your control and realizing the two and then focusing completely on what's in your control. I think from a production, from a success perspective and a fulfillment perspective, has really presented a lot of value in my life. And really Stoic philosophy is the anchor to my mindset, my teaching, in addition to leadership philosophy.
That's amazing, my man. So what's next for you? You got your own podcast. You know, tell us about that and tell us about anything else that you have going on where people can connect with you and learn from you.
Well, I mean, my big vision, especially after a very challenging 2 years for humanity with COVID, I'm referring to, but definitely, you know, our industry, you know, we are on the rebound and we're on the mend. We sold or awarded, I should say, 10 times the amount of franchise locations we did in 2020, just less last year. And we want that to continue. So our big vision is to continue to make Fit Body Bootcamp a household name. From our franchisee facing mission is to grow their impact to grow their income through impact. So really just being able to, you know, continue to make our franchisees, you know, even more successful than they were yesterday. And then our really, you know, end reach is our client. So it's Mrs. Jones, who we want to inspire fitness and change her life on a day-to-day basis. So that's kind of where my big passion is at the moment, is to continue to grow and build our brand and, you know, continue to hang out with guys like you to make me better, to learn, to push me to grow, and really to continue on my leadership track and trajectory. Because, you know, I take a step back. It's the high income skill that I think the world needs the most. I think it's definitely in short supply, especially as we've seen these last 2 years when, in my humble opinion, there's been a major fail in leadership throughout the world. And I just think it has the ability to impact the most people as my continued mission and vision and calling continues to change. I think I'm grounded at the element and the value of what leadership can do and better leadership can do for our world.
Absolutely amazing, my man. Absolutely amazing. So what's the name of your podcast again?
The Fitness Franchise Podcast.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. All right, my man. I really, really appreciate you, Bryce. Super stoked for the future of Fit Body Bootcamp, you know, as an owner and as a follower and of your stuff. So this is going to be amazing, dude. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Craig, man, I appreciate you. And it's been great and happy to connect, you know, anytime.
Yeah. One last question. Which one of my books is your favorite?
Which one of your books?
Yeah.
Perfect Life Form or Perfect Day Formula. That was the first that came out. Perfect Day, or that came out, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah, it was six years ago.
That was what set me on the trajectory of just really creating more consistency in my life, man. So hats off and thank you for that.
Appreciate it, dude. Appreciate it. Everybody go get that book and go and implement Bryce's leadership information so that you become a better leader in your family, in your community, and in your business. This is Craig Valentine. We'll see you on the next episode of Early Rise Radio very soon.